Welcome back to Crime Cats True Crime. We are here for the part two of H.H. Holmes' Murder Crusade.
Rest in peace, headphone users.
Right.
we fixed it to where it's not super loud. It doesn't bust their eardrums.
We still have Colin here.
Yeah. So Jessica's going to just get right back into it, and we still got a lot of ground to cover, so we're glad that you're back with us, and here we go.
To part two of H.H. Holmes.
I think it's funny you said welcome back and I said, hey, y'all.
Oh, no, it's backwards. Super backwards. But, you know, the backwards man, the backwards man. Which is H.H. Holmes. He's super backwards. He acts like he's super sweet, but he's awful. So Holmes, so where we were, we'll do a little recap. He basically had opened a murder castle, which was a pharmacy. He had a pharmacy on the floor.
The pharmacy.
Dang, why didn't I think of that? Love that. So his pharmacy's downstairs. His apartments are upstairs, which he like rents out for long-term use, which is also all types of entwined in these apartments is his torture chambers. And then on the top floor, on the third floor, he has a hotel, which he's renting out for the Chicago World's Fair. At this point, he was trying to marry. He had been married to two different women, but he was also proposing to one woman named Emmeline. Emmeline then disappeared, and no one knew where she was. Then a man named Charles Chappell was an articulator of Chappell Show.
Chappell
Show. If it had an E on it, it would be Chappell.
You're right, it would. That would be easier to pronounce. But he was basically like the articulator of the skeletons. He would be the man who would like bleach the skeletons and take them from Chappell.
Medieval title, The Articulator of Skeletons.
Right. So soon after Emmeline disappeared, Holmes sent him a female cadaver and the upper body nearly stripped of flesh. Years later, the investigators discovered a woman's shoeless footprint imprinted on the enamel door of Holmes's large vault. So this is like the crematorium we were talking about. So in that crematorium, they found a footprint. They speculated that Holmes had used acid to speed the departure of oxygen from the vault, acid which Emmeline had stepped in before placing her foot upon the door, possibly in an effort to kick it open.
So he poured acid all over the floor.
Yep. And then she stepped in it, and then he put her in the vault. And then her footprint
got burned.
Enamel. Yeah.
What a horrific way to die.
Right? Alive in a crematorium.
Oh, God.
I don't think he was burning her. This is just, he just put her in there and she suffocated.
Ooh, true.
And then she fell in the acid.
Yeah.
It's just on the floor.
True. Oof. I don't know what's worse.
It's all a little bit rough.
Yeah. At the time, Holmes, none of his crimes.
In his homes.
The crimes in the homes.
Had not come yet to light. His future was pretty bright, actually. His businesses were booming. His wife, Myrta, and his daughter, Lucy, who I keep forgetting. that he had a daughter with Myrta. Who, they lived out in Wilmette. So they, you know, he didn't ever have to really deal with her because she lived like 45 minutes away. And
we all know the women folk don't come into town.
She didn't because it was this dangerous city. He wouldn't let her. He's like, hey, stay out there where it's safe.
But I'm going to kill everybody. I'm the unsafe one.
Right. So he was having a great life. He was, business is booming, tourist right for swindling. All he needed now was a secretary. And fortune brought him Minnie Williams. She possessed talents for stenography and typing, as well as the perfect blend of need and weakness. Her guardian uncle, who had bequeathed her a sizable estate, $1.5 to $3 million. Dollars
in adjusted in taxes.
In adjusted that's back in the money. Day. Oh, adjusted already.
So that's
adjusted.
Our okay. time. That's our money. What you know, what it would equate to. Holmes met her in Boston some years before, and Minnie had fallen for him. So he just kind of was like, I need a secretary. Oh, yeah, there's that lady.
With a huge estate in Texas.
With all the money that I need. So he wooed her to Chicago on promises of European travel, extravagant lives, and children.
Tricked you into marrying me.
True. Let's go to Scotland, Colin. When Minnie arrived, Holmes wasted no time convincing her to transfer the deed of her Texas property to one of his aliases.
Man, these are some stupid people.
I know. Why? Like, how are they so easily, like, tricked?
Because back then, rich people, quote unquote, didn't commit crime.
True.
They really believe that if you were
a good person,
a well-to-do person, that meant you, like, if you were a wealthy person, that meant you were a good person.
Mm. Yeah.
The poor people were seen as, well, they're poor because they do bad things.
Yeah.
And, like, obviously only poor people are criminals. So, yeah. I mean, that's why Jack the Ripper was such a shocker to everybody, was it was known that it was an upper-class person. Everyone's like, but rich people don't commit crimes.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he did.
And shocker, they do.
Shocker. I don't know if spoiler, you know this, but...
Spoiler alert, they do a lot.
Well, he went on to, quote-unquote, marry Minnie. Because he's not already married three other times at this point.
Illinois, fix your marriage laws.
But, you know, that is one thing, is there are no records of any of these unions in Cook County, Illinois. So he married these women, but not really. So yeah. he would probably like trick them.
Those, sounds like they went through the ceremonies and he just never
exactly.
That's what never I'm filed the paperwork. Yeah.
That's exactly what
so
I think.
So these girls would sit there and think that they're married.
And they're not. Yeah. So Minnie's sister Anna was pretty skeptical of Holmes. She didn't really like him. She thought that he was fake. She didn't believe any of his shit. She was like, you're full of shit. So Minnie invites her to Chicago to try and, you know, loosen her up. Be like, calm down. Come see him. Come meet him. So she gets to Chicago at the same time as guests are flowing into Holmes's World Hotel Fair. Or World Fair Hotel.
Same thing. It's all the
same thing. You got my flow. There were so many people all coming in at the same time, and Minnie just started getting really jealous of all these beautiful women coming into the hotel all the time. And he's like, you know, being sweet to him because he's a quote unquote sweet guy.
Just like the little cold bear over there.
Colin is eating peanut butter.
Leave me alone. My little boo bear. A little sweet honey bear.
Holmes really made her jealous, though, y'all. Really jealous. So then he had to literally rent her own house to get her out of the hotel because she was so jealous.
He had to rent her a house?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
So this guy owns like six properties at this point.
At this point, he owns a lot of property. He rents her this house because he already is renting a house that his wife lives in Wilmette. And now his girlfriend / second wife is in a new house.
Friend wife.
His friend wife had to put her in, you know, another property so that she doesn't be jealous all the time. And so he could really operate in peace and not have to end up killing her. Like all of his other girlfriends.
I'm trying to help you, lady.
Inside, she could, because she could smell all the grossness, you know, all these chemicals that he's using and all that shit.
She smelled dead people.
To Holmes, though, people were objects to be acquired. He enjoyed the possession of his victims, the control. So like we were talking about earlier, especially in his love life, he enjoyed the pursuit.
Mm-hmm.
To acquire his possession.
And as he lost interest in what's her name? Once
Julia was interested in him, he was like, I'm not interested anymore. Yeah. You can go back to Ned. And at this point, Ned's gone. So then he killed her. But yeah, he really liked the possession of the victims and the control. He was a control freak. He would gas his victims or sneak in and subdue them with chloroform and then dispose of him in the basement. He also had quick lime filled pits. Which, what is quick lime, Cullen? I don't know what that is.
It's an extremely alkaline substance. They used to use it to make stucco, like those super white stucco buildings, like you see like over in Greece and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
They used to use slaked lime or quick lime to get that really bleach white color.
Mm-hmm. So it's like bleach, but like times a million.
Yeah, it's super like,
it's like, okay, is it like when you get that white lime calcium on your sink or whatever?
In concentrated forms, and they used to sell it. Because some people use it in fertilizing fields and stuff to balance out the acidity and alkalinity in a field in the soil. But in super concentrated amounts, it'll dissolve a body very quickly.
That's why, okay, so like whenever we were doing the John Wayne Gacy story, mm-hmm. Everybody kept complaining about the smell coming from the basement, and he would sprinkle lime around his property to get rid of the decomposing body smell.
White powder.
Yeah, okay.
Oh, there was used, the Nazis during the Holocaust used it to try to dispose of bodies as the Allies were closing in. They would try to get rid of the bodies quicker by dumping quick lime all over them.
Jeez. Well, come June, Minnie's sister, Anna, had arrived for her visit. Anna was quickly entranced by Holmes and the city of Chicago. The exotic grandeur of the World's Fair left Anna dumbstruck with awe. Holmes gallantly invited her to stay for the whole summer, cementing Anna's good opinion of her to her new brother-in-law. Anna wrote excitedly to her aunt in Texas that Holmes was going to take the sisters on a world's tour. Before departing, however, Holmes invited Anna on a tour of his hotel alone. During that special tour, Holmes murdered Anna in his gas-filled vault. To cover up her disappearance, he invited Minnie to the hotel to meet Anna and dispose of her as well. He then gave the clothes of the sisters to Benjamin Pycelle's wife, Carrie. And at least one of their remains was given to Charles Chappelle for scientific disposal. So at this point, Holmes began to realize that many of his debts and the questions of all of the many victims' families were growing too intense for him to remain in Chicago. Because not only has he killed these women that we've talked about, he's also killing these people from the World's Fair. All these hotel guests that just came to the hotel to stay while they're going to visit the World's Fair, he's killing an unknown amount of people. We don't know because these people just go to Chicago and then no one ever hears from them again.
Mm-hmm.
And that's hundreds, but we don't know which ones he killed, which ones he didn't kill, because there are no records because the house burned down.
Yeah.
So he realizes that it's growing too intense for him to remain in Chicago. So he decides to set his hotel on fire. So he sets the hotel on fire, but unfortunately for him, the damage was very minimal. Holmes files an insurance claim anyway, but the investigators suspect him of arson. They required payment in person for the beneficiary, which happens to be one of Holmes's many aliases, so he could never collect on it because it was a fake person.
Obviously, yeah.
Holmes's creditors then ambush him with threats of legal action and jail. So he fled for the city of Texas, where he planned to stake claim to Minnie's land and further enrich himself. He then left Chicago with his new fiance, Georgiana Yoke.
Man.
Which is just another poor girl.
He just gets around.
Yep. And his associate, Benjamin Peitzel. Same guy who's just been following him around like a little puppy dog.
Ben must have been a little bit of a sicko, too, if he hadn't bothered him yet.
Right. Well, he's just kind of like his puppy dog. He just follows him everywhere, does whatever he says. Before departing, though, he decided to take out a life insurance on old Peitzel. And why Peitzel didn't notice this was odd, I don't know. After years and years of being with this dude, he's never done that before. But in 1895, authorities compiled a list of all of these missing people that we were talking about earlier. Hundreds of people who went to the fair and never heard from again. In June of 1895.
Damn, time travel here.
Detective Frank Geyer of the Philadelphia Police Force was assigned to find three missing children. Benjamin Peitzel's children. They had last been seen in the company of a suspect incarcerated in
Moyamensing
prison. Old HH. So the insurance company hired Pinkerton Detective Agency to search for Holmes because they suspected him of swindling the company by faking the death of Peitzel. The Pinkertons caught up with him in Boston and had him arrested. He was then extradited to Philadelphia to await trial for insurance fraud. It soon became clear that Holmes did not fake Peitzel's death, but rather actually killed him and made him look like an accident. So he finally did kill Peitzel.
Poor dude.
Detective Geyer began his investigation by interviewing Holmes in prison, who claimed the children traveling in the care of Minnie Williams en route to where their father was quote-unquote hiding. Because, again...
Let me just back in here for a second. It says the Pinkertons came after him. I don't think a lot of people realize how big of a deal that is. The Pinkertons were the precursor to the CIA and the FBI.
Wow.
Like, they were...
The original.
You had to...
Were they mafia or
no,
like...
No, it was just government agent. Like, yeah. They were there. I believe they were founded to hunt down the James Gang, like Jesse James and all that. But you had to royally... screwed up to have the Pinkertons hunting you down. Like, they were ruthless. So that's a pretty big deal. I was like, well, this is like the second huge case that they ever went on, and they went on to basically grow into the CIA and the FBI.
Isn't the Pinkerton Detective Agency still active today?
No?
Oh, I don't know why I thought that one. Well, anyway, old Detective Geyer, he began an investigation by interviewing Holmes in prison, who claimed the children were traveling again in care of Minnie to find their father. A collection of letters were taken from Holmes at his arrest. Geyer pieced together what actually happened. Since Peitzel's wife, Carrie, thought they had really faked her husband's death, Holmes convinced her to let him take three of the Peitzel children to see their father in hiding. Instead, Holmes traveled with the children, Alice, Nellie, and Howard Peitzel, enjoying his control over them. The girls wrote many letters to their mother, none of which Holmes actually posted. Months later, Carrie was crushed by anxiety and grief over the fate of her children. Using the girls' letters to help his detective work, Geyer retraced Holmes's footsteps with the Peitzel children, starting in Cincinnati. From Holmes... hotels to rental houses, city to city, Geyer doggedly traced the children's path to Indianapolis. Here, young Howard became troublesome, and it was here Holmes disposed of him. Throughout his search, Geyer maintained hope that he would find the children alive. He could simply not fathom how anyone could kill three helpless children. From Indiana, Chicago to Detroit, Geyer followed leads. In Detroit, he discovered that Holmes had brought Carrie and the remaining two children and kept them housed in separate houses a few blocks from each other. So that's just super sad to me. Like, they were so close, but yet so far away in their last days. He then, in addition, had a separate hotel for himself in Georgiana. Yoke. That was his new fiance.
Jesus.
I just wonder how they all traveled.
This is number four fiance. No, yeah. Number five? Number four. One of the two. Number four, number five. It was all a game for him, you know? It was just, he reveled in this possession of his pawns. It was just like a giant game of chess. Of being in control of people that can't help it.
Man, I get stressed out if I break a nail.
Right?
I can't imagine living that kind of life.
Yeah. Not knowing where your children are. And,
yeah.
And hoping that this guy is doing the right thing.
Right.
But here in Detroit, Alice wrote her unsent letters. Howard is not with us now. And that's his older sister. As Geyer peeled away the layers of Holmes's crimes, he gained a feel for the man's lies and behavior, even as he was stricken by the children's tragic plight, who obviously were homesick and super sad about just living in hotels and not knowing where their parents were. They were writing letters to their mother, not knowing she was only three blocks away. At this point, Geyer's search had made the papers, and he'd become somewhat a folk hero and a celebrity. Readers nationwide followed his search for the missing children, including Holmes. Geyer's search led him to Toronto, where a tip about a man matching Holmes' description, who had rented a house and once borrowed a shovel. With an associate detective from Pinkerton, Geyer visited the address, borrowing the same shovel from a neighbor, and excavated the house's cellar, where he then found the bodies of Alice and Nellie Peitzel. In Philadelphia, in the prison, Holmes, knowing he would soon stand trial, he began writing his memoir, which, can you just imagine his memoir? Absolutely disgustingly narcissistic.
Of course.
And most of it was just straight up lies. It's not known if it was just delusional or he was just a pathological liar. I'm assuming a little bit of both. He even wrote a letter to Carrie telling her children were alive and well with Minnie Williams in London, which he had killed every one of these people in the story except for Carrie. So that's just kind of almost delusional at that point. When Holmes was confronted with the new development regarding the discovery of the Peitzel children, he still maintains his innocence. Holmes plotted to have his memoir published to sway the public opinion on his behalf. Geyer, meanwhile, returned to Indianapolis to continue his search for Howard Peitzel. The Chicago police, prompted by Geyer's discovery of the missing girls, entered Holmes's castle in search of evidence and quickly turned up a shitload of it. Bones, blood-stained dissection tables, surgical tools, quicklime acid, charred women's shoes.
What?
Tattered clothing. This one's really gross. Human hair plugging a stovepipe and more human remains. And then again, the footprint etched in the door of the walk-in vault. These searches also uncovered the remains of a child.
No way.
Geyer traveled to Chicago only to discover it was the body of a little girl who now is thought to be Pearl Connor, which was the first little girl that he killed. The woman on
the Christmas Eve
yeah. killing. Yes. Okay. All of that means nothing to Geyer, though. He wasn't looking for Pearl. Geyer and his associates investigated over 900 leads. Finally, on a last desperate hunch, he stopped at a real estate office in Irving, Illinois, on the chance that Holmes might have used it to rent a property. Lo and behold, he had. In the rental house, Holmes had installed a large wood stove. Inside the stove and flute. Geyer found human remains. Among other items, he also found Howard's favorite toy, a tin man that his father had bought him at the Chicago's World's Fair.
Oh, that's super sad.
Right. With the discovery of the final missing Peitzel child, Frank Geyer became somewhat of America's Sherlock Holmes. Which is kind of ironic that the guy he found was Holmes, Sherlock Holmes.
Oh, okay.
I thought that was interesting. But on August 19th, 1895, Holmes' murder castle burnt to the ground. Police suspected arson in an attempt to cover up the building's remaining secrets. You know, although Holmes was technically in prison at this time, but, you know, he had lots of associates.
Yeah.
He had lots of people that he paid.
On the outside.
On the outside that could have easily burnt the house down.
Uh-huh.
So that's what they're assuming happened. On September 12th, 1895, Holmes was indicted in Pennsylvania for the murder of Benjamin Peitzel. Indianapolis police indicted him for the murder of Howard Peitzel. And Toronto police for the murders of Nellie and Alice Peitzel. Holmes' memoir, wherein he maintains his innocence, hit the newsstands there shortly after. Chicago was humiliated with the national media. No one could understand how the police department could fail to notice the tremendous number of Holmes's crimes. One of the most difficult revelations was the Chicago police chief, during his previous career as the attorney, had actually represented Holmes in several commercial lawsuits. He looks like he just looked the other way, if you ask me. The Chicago Times-Herald said of Holmes, "He is a prodigy of wickedness, a human demon, a being so unthinkable that no novelist would dare to invent such a character." The story, too, tends to illustrate the end of a century, which it was.
Yeah, true.
Holmes stood trial for Benjamin Peisel's death in late 1895. The Philadelphia district attorney called him the most dangerous man in the world. He was found guilty and sentenced to death. As he awaited execution, he then confessed to 27 more murders. But his confession was a mix of truth and lies, like his entire life.
Yeah.
Some of the victims he named that were still straight up alive. They weren't dead. He couldn't have killed them because they're still alive. But some of them were dead, so some of them were true. His exact murder count will never be known, but some estimates, again, range all the way to 200.
That's a lot.
That is a lot.
He's a busy man.
Holmes was hanged May 1896. Thank goodness, right?
Right.
This is where it gets a little weird. I mean, not that it's not all extremely weird, but in 2017, two of Holmes' great-grandchildren successfully petitioned to have his remains exhumed in order to finally put the rest a rumor that Holmes had somehow escaped the gallows and was someone else was buried in his place. Such was the power of Holmes' mystique. Many refused to believe that the infamous White City Double had actually paid for his treacherous crimes. Some people actually believe that Holmes is Jack the Ripper, including his own great-grandson, Jeff Mugitt. In supporting his claim, Mugitt says that the two had similar handwriting and that Holmes was a surgeon, just like the Ripper. And his great-grandfather, who was indeed in London during the time when the Ripper killings took place. Also, that his ancestor looks closely resembles the police sketch of the London serial killer. He likewise vows to further evidence that the two killers were the same person, an American Ripper. A series on the subject will soon be on the History Channel. "I'm a descendant of the devil," Jeff Mugit said in a preview for the segment. "I have uncovered credible evidence which suggests that Holmes was Jack the Ripper." Personally, I just think it's those old Mugit genes at work trying to find a way to con people out of money. Don't you think that his great-great-grandson Jeff Mugit's book sold pretty well after his History Channel interview?
I'm sure it did.
And the MO just doesn't match to me. Colin, I know you know a lot about the Ripper. What do you think?
Absolutely not.
I don't think so either.
Completely different killing styles. The Ripper had misspelled very common words in all of his letters. Holmes was also obviously very educated. Holmes was doing things because he liked control of people and he liked the manipulation and the game. The Ripper was killing people because he could. It was people that would never be missed by anyone. He was a joy killer, and Holmes was, he was about the game. It's two completely different types of people. There's absolutely no doubt in my mind that they are not the same person.
I agree. And
I don't think so either.
And the Ripper, he liked to get all up close and personal. And it feels like Holmes more liked, again, he liked knocking them down chutes, you know, and yeah. Like it's just
gassing them in rooms,
having all these rooms with different contraptions.
He didn't want to slash people up. That wasn't his MO. It just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, it doesn't match at all.
And I think that these,
I mean, a lot of people can have similar handwriting, so big deal.
And a lot of people had that mustache back then.
Yeah, saying that he looks similar, you should look, Google photos of late Victorian men. Everyone has a bowler hat. Everyone has a big bushy mustache.
Yeah. Everybody looks like the Monopoly Man.
Any slightly skinny white guy with a big mustache and a bowler hat is going to look similar, especially to a police sketch, which are notoriously inaccurate.
Mm-hmm. Again, I think it's just those Mugit genes trying to con people out of money.
Trying to get some money. Yeah. Maybe they're not trying to con. Maybe they're just trying to tell a story.
Yeah,
and
true.
Want people to pay up.
True.
I mean, I don't know what I would do.
I can't imagine being the ancestor.
It's the Streisand effect. Any publicity is good publicity.
That's true. Well, I know this was a long one, but I don't want to skip thanking any of our lovely supporters. Today, I want to thank some of our newcomers to the discussion group. David Flood, who is a friend of ours.
Yes. Hi, David.
Thank you, and you're awesome. Shelly John Joseph, thank you so much for joining our group. You're the bee's knees.
Oh, I've heard that forever.
I like it. It's a cute one.
Buzz.
Jess Stainbrook, you have a really cool name, and I bet you are the super cool person.
She is pretty cool. I actually know her.
Do you know her?
I used to work with her.
Oh, nice. I thought she was just a random one.
No, I know
cool.
her.
Well, you're awesome, Jess.
Her and I worked with her husband, too. They're pretty cool people.
Awesome. Well, thanks for following us and being in the discussion group. If you're not in the discussion group, you need to stop what you're doing right now. Literally pull over your car and, you know, join the discussion group. It's really important.
Yeah, we need it. Yeah. It's fun. I need to spend some more time on there. I just have a lot of things going on. Have we watched anything new that we need to review?
I really want to watch the Aaron Hernandez.
Okay, I've seen it.
Tell me what you think.
I like it. It was really interesting. I think it's, he did have a really bad case of CTE, but it's not justifiable.
What's CTE?
You can explain it probably better. You don't know what? Okay, CTE is a, it's when you're, a lot of football players, they tackle and hit each other, it causes brain damage. Mm. And you can see the scans of a normal healthy brain and a brain with CTE.
Mm-hmm.
And it causes all these symptoms like rage and anger and stuff like that. So it's really good. I enjoyed it. It's only 3 episodes long.
Okay.
It's it's kind of sad though.
Mm.
They focus too much on him being bisexual or gay.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Why is that relevant?
Exactly. Well, they say it's relevant because he had a lot of pent-up anger about his sexuality and
yeah.
kill people. Or,
because
like, the rage would come out.
Yeah.
But I like it. It's pretty good.
I'll have to check it out. I've just been in mourning over my favorite show that is ending, Jocinda.
Oh, Jocinda.
I love Jocinda, and it's the last season, and I'm gobbling it up, all of those episodes, because I love me some Jocinda.
Yeah. So. I haven't really watched a whole lot of true crime stuff lately because I feel like I've already seen it all.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of in a
rut.
Yeah, but
in a show hole.
It is. Yeah. Netflix needs to put out some new content, true crime related. But I watched the new Fortune Fiendmeister stand up.
Oh yeah.
The other day,
I love her.
I laughed so hard that I couldn't breathe.
She's so funny.
But, yeah, I love it. Cullen, what you into?
I watched a great documentary about the 1857 Indian Mutiny in British India earlier. Oh. It was great.
Oh, wow.
I'm sure y'all are fascinated by
it. Yeah. You know what movie, though, I really want to go see?
What?
It's like 1917.
Please take him. He wants to see it, and
I want to go see it.
It's got Englishman funny name in it.
Yeah. So. Rob wants to go see it. Maybe y'all can go together. Y'all can have like a dude date.
Yeah,
go. I'm not going to make him drive all the way over from Mobile just to go see a movie from me with me.
Oh, he would go anyway.
We mean Daphne.
There you go.
There you go. All right, guys. Well, that's all for today. And until next time.
And we can't wait for you to hear our next one because it is a doozy. Let's just say it is not an American case, and it's not a man.
What is it?
It's a woman.
But who?
I don't want to tell anyone yet. It's going to be a secret, and I've just given a little hints, which is a...
Y'all, I don't even know what it is. That's not much of a secret.
What about
time period?
Time period and country.
Country is Australia.
Oh.
It's a female.
Okay. Oh, I know who it is!
Don't say.
This is my favorite one.
Koala murders.
It's not
Steve Irwin.
It's not Steve Irwin. He's a man.
True.
Who wasn't murdered.
Stingray might have been female.
Stingray murdered him. Stingray might have been a female.
Yes, the story is on the stingray that murdered Steve Irwin. You've cracked the case.
Okay, mate.
But yeah, stay tuned. We got some good stuff coming in the near future. And
stay spooky.